in northeast Spain. Green flag at the back, red flag goes away. Can Lorenzo make one of those special starts? Here we go in Aragon.
Hello, welcome to MotorPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 469 for Wednesday, the 30th of September, 2015. My name is Len Padilla from Pamplona, Spain, and I'm here with Martin Darlington from Qatar, I guess. Right, Martin?
Hey, firm. Yeah, I'm across here still on a week's holiday. Well, thanks to Ultimate. So I will just do the traditional pop.
Oh, well, here we go. Hold on. Oh, I'm sorry. That was very weak.
That sounded like a bottle of wine.
No, it wasn't a bottle of wine. It was a bottle of Negra Modelo dark lager.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm being true to my heritage and drinking Mexican beer.
Good lad. Well, Len, you were there. You were at Aragon. I know it's one of your favorite tracks to ride round, but we look forward to hearing all about that. We do have a new subscriber, Waleed Al Arifi. Thank you very much indeed, Waleed. Really, really welcome. Sadly, that's the only new subscriber this week, but, you know, between you guys, you do keep us going. And we had some listener feedback. Before we get into that, Len, because it does sort of mention hitting the apex, the Mark Neal film, which obviously we've been talking about. Jules loved it. I enjoyed it, but I didn't think it quite lived up to. I mean, I didn't want to stop watching it, although I've still got the last 20 minutes to watch, but that's just because I had to go to work or go and do stuff. What were your thoughts? I assume you've seen it.
Yeah, I did see it. And I have to say, I probably would have thought very differently about it had it been the first movie instead of the, I've lost track, I think it's the fourth. I thought it was okay. And yeah. I guess, you know, but then again, I know you guys have talked about this already, that we're not really the, you know, the intended audience. But I still wonder if people who aren't super fans would still get much more, would get much out of it. You know, I don't, I don't think it really holds up very well to movies like, and I forget the name, the TT movie, Closer to the Edge.
Yeah.
I thought that for an outsider, that was a much more exciting film. But, you know, who knows? My perspective is a bit distorted. I think all of ours is.
Yeah.
But again, I think it was okay. I think they need to do, if they're going to do another one, they need to do something besides just use sort of regular kind of footage. I liked more the interviews than I did the racing footage.
Absolutely. And I think that was the point that Jules made, which once he'd made it, I thought, actually, he's hit a very good point there, that it took us closer to the riders, but it would have been nice to have seen them at home, or, you know, actually been in, you know, had an embedded camera whilst they're and listening to what they say to their engineers and, you know, the discussions, and even if they were just larking about. So yeah, because most of what you were looking at was either racing or the standard distance shot we get every race weekend of looking into a, you know, into a pit, and there's Rossi talking to Albazera, and, you know, or Ramon Fercado talking to Lorenzo, whoever. And you're thinking, yeah, I want to hear what they're saying, though. You know, this is meant to be the extra access, but maybe they're very, very twitchy about people hearing that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe at races, I don't know. Maybe it's just impossible to get that. But the, like you said, the parts of it I liked the most were when they were, you know, talking to Rossi. It was kind of unfortunate that what they had to be talking to him about was, you know, the Marco accident. But still, yeah. I think having, you know, talking to him like a human being and not so much like a rider was interesting. And yeah. I have to say this, the similar interview with Jorge, to me, was the most human, or maybe the closest to being a human, that I've ever seen Jorge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When he was sort of saying, I feel sick. I get sick with the nerves beforehand. I don't like it. And then, you know, he's, I mean, did you read it? Have you read his book, the first book?
I have not. I didn't know there
It's
was more than one.
painfully on. I don't know if there is a more recent one, but it was painfully honest. And he was just saying, you know, I found that my girlfriend was distracting me, so I had to tell her to go away. And you know, and some of the stuff we were saying, yeah, after that season in 2008, I started to sit down and think, I don't know if I want to do this anymore because it really hurts.
Right.
Yeah, just amazing. I mean, the thing I'm looking forward to is the Rossi autobiography after he's retired, but I still suspect we won't get the full ish because he's probably going to have a job for life with Yamaha as an ambassador, so he'll have to tone down what he says about Yamaha. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe you'll say, look, I'm right in this. And if they were going to make the film of Rossi's life, you see, they needed to do it quite a lot of years ago because Benicio del Toro would have been perfect to play him, I think, but not now because he's a bit older and fleshier, and I don't
Yeah,
think you could
I
get
thought they would have had to
big.
go back in time even more and get Steve McQueen to play him.
I can't see Steve McQueen doing a convincing fuck, in the interview when he likes to
True,
drop in
true.
swearing. So are you gay? And yeah. Anyway, all of that was referenced, really. We had an email from Nevin Power, and Nevin made a point about the Misano coverage of the race weekend and the lack of comments on Showa Tomizawa. Dave and Jules replied to Nevin. I don't think I've actually replied in person, but they basically said what I wanted to say, which was, yeah. But Jules pointed out, Showa Tomizawa was mentioned several times by Nick Harris on and Matt Burt on the MotoGP.com coverage. Certainly BT Sport mentioned him. And it was, look, it is that circuit is named for Simoncelli. It was, what, 6 miles from where he lived, where he grew up. And also, and because Nevin then went on and said he felt that hitting the apex could have mentioned Showa Tomizawa. And then I did say it was a bad year. I'm sure Brad Pitt says, there were three riders lost that year because, of course, we lost young Peter Lenz as well, who Jim and Jules knew, the 13-year-old lad at Indy, killed in the rookies race. But Jules also made a very good point. He said the thing is, you've got to remember, it's hitting the apex is about the premier class. Simoncelli was in that, and that year was Simoncelli the criminal, Simoncelli the prodigal son. He got his first podium, then he got his second podium, and he was really coming of age and finding his place, and then he gets killed on the way up, and he was a larger than life character. Everything you hear about Showa Tomizawa was he was a really fun guy, he was a nice guy, but he just didn't have the profile of Simoncelli. So I think it's inevitable that he's always going to get more coverage. It's just the nature of the beast. Just as a Simoncelli win would have got more coverage than Tomizawa winning a race.
Yeah, definitely. It's it's unfortunate. The world's not perfect, but the public attention span only sort of has so much capacity.
Exactly. I mean, Nevin mentioned about people booing when people crash, and I think Jules's comment was, yeah, well, most sports fans are complete dickheads, and once you accept that, it becomes a lot easier to deal with. And he's like, yeah, I think he's got a good point. The other thing Nevin did make, and it's a great name, by the way, Nevin Power. I'm not sure if it's a real name, but it's not quite as good as Max Power, obviously, but it's very close. But Nev went on to say how impressed he's been with Alex De Angelis, and I'm thinking, okay, I'll get to the punchline
Is
in a
that this
minute.
year or when's he talking about?
No, now, yeah.
Can't
Said,
say
you
I've
know, some
noticed.
really some brilliant rides on that ART are brilliant. I'm thinking, ooh, I don't think so. He's got 2 points. Hiroshi Ayama's got five, and I think he only ran in one. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I couldn't agree with that. I think Alex De Angelis is filling a space. I mean, Mike D'Amelio was the comparison that Nevin drew. Mike D'Amelio brings a lot of money into the gig, so I think there's not a lot you can really say about Mike D'Amelio. I'm sure if they find someone who brings equal backing and can be more successful, they'll get them.
Yeah, I think the only flaw in Nevin's logic is that he needs to be comparing Alex De Angelis to me if he wants to make him look really good.
Yeah. I mean, Carol Abraham is below him because Carol Abraham scored no points, but he's been absolutely ravaged with injury this
Yes.
season. So it's not really a fair comparison. Yeah, I must admit, I sometimes forget Alex De Angelis is still riding in MotoGP till his You see ADA down on the little thing at the bottom. Sometimes you see him as he gets up into 21st place. Another email we had, Stephen Helmut from Cincinnati. Lynn, you're sort of partly American, aren't you?
I am 100% United States of American, yes.
You are. I say partly because you've got quite a worldview and you live in Spain, so maybe I should have said you're a worldly, wise American. But why is it that Americans always tell you where they're from? It is quite a habit, isn't it?
You know, I'm trying to think. Most English people wouldn't need to tell you where they're from, because if you're keyed into the accents, you'll know.
Yeah.
And the accents are much smoother in their transition across the U.S. I don't know. Maybe it's the only way they've got. I don't know. I never really noticed it.
But why would I and Stephen, I'm not being rude here. Please don't. It's not aimed at you. But it's like whenever we met and worked with American servicemen, you know, they'd say Hershey B. North Dexter, Brooklyn, New York. And you think, OK, it makes no difference to me whatsoever where you're from. I don't care. You know, Hershey. Or whatever your name is, you know. But they always introduce themselves with, you know, Buck Rogers, Miami. Oh, right. Lovely. Martin Darlington stood somewhere in Germany or, you know, Saudi Arabia, wherever we were at the time. And I'd think, why would you be interested where I'm from? I'd say I'm from Cambridge. I go, Cambridge, Massachusetts? No, Cambridge.
No,
Cambridge.
The other one.
Yeah, the Cambridge, not one of the many replicas. Anyway. Stephen and his wife, they sound fun couple, actually. They flew to the Misano race weekend. And Steve emailed us. He said, just after it, we were lying on a beach on the Italian Riviera thinking, we should do this every summer. So this is their plan. Their summer holiday, henceforth, for the foreseeable future, will be going to a European round. Or if there's a couple fairly close together, like, say, for example, Brno and the Red Bull Ring in Austria. I can't remember where they are on the dates. They're going to come across to Europe and watch a MotoGP race or two. So if anyone's got any suggestions, because they do feel that they're sort of novices on the travelling to Europe to watch the rounds, but Steve's also a new subscriber, so we love him. So any top tips for Steve and his wife from Cincinnati would be very welcome.
Yeah, I mean, the Italian rounds are great. Mugello is a fantastic experience. I would, you know, and maybe it's me being a bit provincial. I would almost recommend going somewhere that's, you know, sort of different and off the beaten track in GP terms. And I think that's Aragon. You've got to be able to appreciate not quite a desert environment, but a very empty environment. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful area around the circuit and in the hills near it. But not everybody's going to appreciate that.
Picture Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen and Charles Bronson and the rest of the Magnificent Seven trotting through the Arroyo, or whatever they call it, and you've pretty much got an idea, I guess.
Almost, yeah.
Well, I mean, some of the spaghetti westerns were filmed in that area, weren't they, Andalusia?
Well, the spaghetti westerns were filmed in Andalusia, but Andalusia is way down south. Aragon is quite a bit further north.
Okay, I'll just shut up before
that's
I
all
make
right.
myself
that's all right.
more stupid.
I don't know.
Saxon Ring is another one that I think would be... interesting to go to. It's not a circuit I enjoy, but it just makes for great racing. I would Stephen, if you're listening, I'm sure you are, all the advice I've ever had, stay the hell away from Le Mans. It is unless you're a 18-year-old spring break loving party animal who doesn't need any sleep for 3 or 4 days and doesn't mind getting into several fights over whose beer keg is being rolled down the hill. It sounds mad, but not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a reflection of French motorcycling culture. I don't know if you've driven much in cities in France.
Some.
The motorcyclists are to a man insane.
Yeah.
And they just think that's the right way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you ever get a chance, read David Emmett of Moto Matters. He doesn't go to Le Mans, or he certainly didn't used to. He said, I refuse to go to act as a journalist and promote their circuit and then have to pay, I think, €90 or something, he said it was, the last time he did go for the internet connection. He was like, nah, not doing that.
Yeah,
he can't stand the place. News. No surprise, Danny Kent was confirmed. He is going to Moto2 with Leopard Racing on a Kalex chassis with teammate Miguel Oliveira that we already knew about. So that's good. Alex Rins staying with Pons Racing and Moto2 and being joined by Edgar Pons, younger brother of Axel Pons. And I did wonder about that. I wonder if Alex Rins is thinking, right, so daddy's boy is coming to join as my teammate, so who's going to get preferential treatment? I suspect Cito Pons will give it to whoever's doing better, irrespective of whether it's his son or not.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any chance that Rins is going to be miles ahead of Edgar Pons, you know, at least for the first, you know, first half of the year. As fast as Edgar might be, you know, he's coming from the Seb. He's not, you know, he's not up to speed yet in world terms.
Mm. Also, other news, Locatelli and Quartararo join Mir in Leopard Moto 3 for 2016. Speed Week, this is Harry reports, the rumour-loving German news site report that KTM want Quartararo in their paddock so badly that Leopard may swap from Honda to KTM. Harry advises we take that with a grain of salt because Speed Week take the shotgun approach to rumours, spreading all of them and hoping at least one of them is right. I mean, MCN used to be really bad for that. It's got a lot better. Matt Burke was pretty on the money, and Stephen English has certainly picked up that ball and is running in the right direction with it. If you don't mind a rugby analogy, as painful as an Englishman at the moment, but there you go. I don't know. Leopard, can you really see him going to KTM after the success of Edward Honda?
I was just thinking the same thing. You know, you've got a bike on which you're probably going to win the championship, and your second rider is also doing very well, and you're going to change that? I can't see it.
No, I can't either. In more sort of, it's not really silly season. It's mildly giddy season, isn't it? Loris Baz has signed with Avincia Ducati, which I think is brilliant news. He'll run a GP14.2 alongside Hector Barbera, and I will put my money on the table and say by the end of the season next year, Loris Baz will be comfortably ahead of Hector Barbera, because I think that boy's got talent.
Yeah, I don't think it'll take until the end of the season.
No, but you know, when we tot up the points at the end, I mean,
right.
It might happen a lot earlier. Yeah, I remember my really, really brave prediction at the beginning of 2004. No, Rossi hasn't destroyed his career. I reckon by the end of this season, he might be on the podium. And then, of course, he won his first race. And I thought,
well, you were right.
I told you. I was right. I could have been a lot more right. I was a bit right, yes. But I know I did think I was sticking my neck out when I said that. Now, it has been confirmed today, MotoGP.com, that Yoni Hernandez has signed with Aspar. But what the press release doesn't say is what Aspar are going to be running. Now, I've understood that Yoni Hernandez was contracted by Ducati and had more than just this season on his contract. Now, I know contracts are negotiable. They may well have just released him because they want Loris Baz. But it doesn't say whether Aspar are going to be running Hondas or Ducatis. This weekend, the BT Sport guys, Neil Hodgson in particular, who's becoming a very astute pundit, I think, was saying, yeah, they keep talking about Ducati, but he thought that was just a way of trying to get Honda to give him a bit of a deal. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't see Aspar really falling over himself to stay with Honda. I mean, I can't see anybody trying to keep Honda open bikes for next year.
No, true. Possibly not. And it also looks like Eugene Lavity is going to stay with them as well, which is good news. We like Eugene. He's a clever rider. Nothing being said, I assume, until further notice, they are going to be with Honda. But I'm sure Ducati would quite like the feather in the cap from getting even a fairly small outfit in MotoGP terms. Team to take their bikes rather than Honda might look rather good, even though we all know it's just down to economics.
Yeah.
Tito Rabat, bless him, every person who spoke to him this weekend was saying, so Mark VDS MotoGP bike next season. And he just kept smiling again. I hope so, but I don't know. And it's not been confirmed. But at the post-race Michelin test, He rode it. He rode the Mark VDS on the MotoGP bike. So I think that one's pretty much...
Yeah, I think that all means yes. I think the big smile on his face every time means yes. It means yes, yeah. I can't say.
He's just a lovely bloke to listen to, and I like Tito Rabat. He's very easy to warm to.
Yeah, he's... I have to say, he got a lot of... you know, he got a bad rap early on because he's, you know, from a family with money. And, you know, it could be argued that maybe he bought his way into a few of his earlier rides, but he worked hard, got fast, and, you know, and look where he is. I think he's a great, great success story.
My late boss, who was a huge bike racing fan and used to do endurance racing with his son and stuff, who really sadly died last year, very young, cancer took him, unfortunately. But his son started... at about 10, 11 years old, racing against Danny Kent. And Pete said there would be people in the paddock going, well, no wonder he's out front, that Kent lad, because, you know, he's got all the backing. And Pete used to say, there's a reason he's got the backing. It's because he's the fastest rider. You stick them all on equal equipment. He said, my lad could not keep up with him. He was too good. That's, and then he, you know, and success generates success and generates backing. It's like the people who claim that Marc Marquez had a telemetry guy when he was racing Mini Moto, and you think, I don't know why there isn't any telemetry on Mini Moto bikes, but you know, they come out with all this thing of, oh, it's easy to ride to the top. Same with Tito. But I think the criticism is when you get someone who's circulating at the back of the grid, isn't really doing anything. I don't know, Mike D'Amelio or someone, you know, Mike, I'm not pointing a finger, that's not meant to be funny. But you know, you could understand people saying, well, he's only there because he brings money. It's happened in Formula One over the years. Yeah. Tito Rabat's a bloody world champion.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah, definitely.
And he wasn't that great in the smallest class. Goes to the intermediate class, he's really good. Okay, he's going to come second this year, but that's not bad. Maybe he's going to suit a bigger bike. But his work ethic. And you ride Almeria, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. And he's every time I've been there, I mean, almost every time I've been there, he's out there before we get on track, at lunchtime, and afterward. And then I thought the amazing thing was, because I know the guy that owns the track, I was talking to David one day when we were there, and he was telling me, oh yeah, you know, we've got a new circuit. You'll have to try the new circuit sometimes. And I said, new circuit? What's that? He said, yeah, well, you know, Tito didn't feel like he was, you know, had very good experience in the wet. So we built this new small circuit with sprinklers, and he rides around in the rain on purpose, wanting to.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't care if he got his chance. The point is, he's taking his chance and he's good enough to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think that kind of finger pointing, you know, it come the racer mentality, you know, necessarily is that, often delusionally so, you know, that I'm the best, that if everything falls into place, I can do it. You know, and they all need to believe that. But I think that also leads them sometimes to some pretty, you know, logically incorrect conclusions, thinking, you know, well, if I had what that guy had, I know I could do, and it's not always the case.
Well, this was the argument, which we may touch on later, about Valentino Rossi, when I was so disappointed in his reaction when Lorenzo was mooted to be coming up to join. He tried to block it, and he's admitted himself now he tried to block it, and he said, in the interview with BT Sport with Colin Edwards a few weeks ago, and he said, not respect from Yamaha, but I wanted to be favoured. And it's like, no. If you want to be seen as the best, you have to welcome all contenders to your title on equal equipment, you know, and fair play to Rossi. He's done it, and hats off to him. But he said, no, I had to learn a lot about myself. And I think he now looks back and thinks, yeah, Jorge probably gave me a few more years at this, because I've had to raise my game. But, I mean, Nigel Mansell, when I used to watch Formula One, if he won, it was despite the fact his car wasn't as good as everyone else, so thanks to his brilliance. And if he didn't win, it was because his car wasn't as good as everyone else's. You know, it's never the fact that, you know, he went to wave at the crowd at the Canadian Grand Prix and hit the kill switch, which he still denies. Yeah, bullshit. But there you go. Anyway. So we had Tito Rabat testing the Mark VDS Honda MotoGP bike at post-race Michelin test. Because these are very heavily veiled in secrecy, we don't know how he got on. What we do know is there were several crashes, courtesy of Moto Matters and Spanish journalist Borja González, How was that?
That was perfect.
Good. Excellent. I should take up languages, well, at least accents, including Valentino Rossi, who destroyed his M1. The fairing was broken in half. Apparently, you could just see the yellow six. There was no four left.
Yeah, it looked pretty rough with all of its guts pouring out.
Yeah. And Rossi was reporting a bit of pain in his right arm, but we don't think it's anything serious. But stay tuned, because we do have some big injury news later. Anyway, so do you want to talk about the Borja González report about the Honda suiting the Michelin better than the M1?
Well, I mean, that seems to be the case, what he's saying, you know, via Borja, that, you know, the Honda suits the Michelin better than the M1. Aragon was the last in-season test for the contracted riders. Obviously, the next time that they're going to get on the tires is in Valencia. I kind of think it's hard to draw conclusions on that, because you never quite know, you know, what exactly are people testing when they're testing.
Yeah.
You know, are they chasing times? Are they chasing base setup? Are they throwing, you know, hard and soft fronts on to see what the difference is in feel? You know, I don't know. I have to say, I'm certainly not a journalist. I barely play one on the internet. I question a lot the conclusions that motorcycle journalists draw from what they see. I think they draw a lot of correlations, but I think they don't have the basis, in fact, to draw many conclusions.
Well, I know that when Colin Edwards was on BT Sport at Indy, he was talking with James Toews and Neil Hodgson. I'm pretty sure that's when it was. And they were saying he was absolutely convinced that the Michelins will suit Lorenzo more than anyone else, because the thing he complains about with the Bridgestone is the very rigid tyre wall construction.
Mm-hmm.
And he likes a tyre that deforms a little bit more. And he said, this is now, Lorenzo's had front wheel crashes at these Michelin tests. We know that as well. But Colin Edwards was absolutely convinced. He said, you know, this is, if you're going to beat him, this is the year to do it, because next year it might really suit him. Which kind of suggests that, no, the Hondas won't suit it. Well, I don't know. Maybe the Honda will, but maybe we'll see Jorge on a Honda. I don't know. But yeah, we've got Colin Edwards, Michele Pirro, and Randy Depunier still developing the Michelins prior to the Valencia test. Mika Kallio has been doing some private testing work with the Michelin, MotoGP Michelins, but on superbikes. So, yeah. And of course, at the Valencia test, they should be testing the so far developed 2016 chassis and everything, which would be interesting.
Yeah, because there's, you know, it's funny, there's a few different changes all at the same time. You know, they're changing the, changing the parts of the electronics, you know, which means that they're going to change parts of the chassis chasing after that. Changing the brand of the tire, which I think from what we're seeing is changing the style of the front, and changing the size as well. You know, it's not necessarily that, you know, the 16.5 to 17 is going to make a radical difference, but, you know, it is something that they're all going to have to spend some time, you know, getting their heads and their setup around. So, you know, again, who knows what it is, what phase they're at, what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It will be interesting. It will be interesting. In BSB news, Bwiza Kawasaki have pulled out of the final two rounds, leaving Chris Walker and Danny Buchan without rides. Asterisk. See breaking news in a moment. It's a big shame. I mean, Chris Walker's a paddock veteran, and he's a great character to see around, so it'll be a shame not to have him there. But Danny Buchan, this is the asterisk, is going to join the PBM squad, replacing the injured Stuart Easton. No doubt Paul Bird will be saying to him, right, see that red Yamaha with Josh Brooks on it? That's your target.
Go get that.
You don't need to finish. You don't need to finish races. You are now to be known as Exocet. But Bwiza, the sponsor, will join PBM as a title sponsor for the final two rounds as well. And also in BSB news, Ant West, obviously having got the flip from QMMF Racing in the Moto2, which still confuses me. There must be more to it than that. He's going to join Tsingtao MV Augusta in British Supersport. So BSB fans, you're going to see the affable Aussie, Ant West, is going to be belting around a track near you anytime soon.
I think all we can hope for is some wet races.
Yeah. I did like that line that someone came out with. His manager says he's quick in the wet because he's too dumb to realize it's dangerous.
Poor Ed.
I wouldn't, the son of a boxing champion, I wouldn't say that to his face.
You know, what I was thinking about this whole, this Be Wiser thing, I wonder, and what I'm going to say might not be correct, so you'll have to fix it if it isn't. Is this possibly a result of the showdown? I mean, did either Chris Walker or Danny Buchan make it into the showdown?
Nope, nowhere near.
And I wonder if that's a sponsor like Be Wiser saying, you know, there's two seasons, the first during which we get a lot of exposure because, mm-hmm. like you were saying, you know, Chris Walker is a paddock favorite. He will be maybe not on the podium, but he'll be fighting it out for fourth, fifth, sixth.
And Danny Buchan was getting a lot of attention and television coverage, unfortunately, generally just after he'd crashed.
Right.
Because he did a lot of that.
But I wonder if, the nature of the whole thing changes in the showdown. And it's pretty much six riders that have all the attention on them.
Yeah, I mean, this nonsense about a Riders' Cup, I think that's more insulting than the open class, you know, going at MotoGP, going into the bloody winner's enclosure. Thank goodness we'll see an end of that next year. But, yeah, it's, well, you know our views. Dave is our resident BSB expert. He can't stand it. I can't stand it. I understand why it was brought in after the Leon Camus year, but no.
Yeah, I'm with you. I understand it, but I don't really.
Some years, the championship will be wrapped up early. Sorry, it's just the nature of racing. Other years, it'll go right down to the wire. Just let it happen naturally. Stop trying to Bernie Eccleston it and make it artificially exciting.
Yeah, it seems like, even worse than Bernie Eccleston, it seems like, you know, the NASCARification of bike racing.
Oh, don't. I'm going to have to mention cheese.
You just did.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Do you want to run with the Red Bull rookies update? Because I haven't seen any of this. I know nothing about
one thing, and I have to say, this was, I remember I was sitting in the stands during the rookies race Saturday afternoon, and there was a red flag and it stopped. And I have to say, it's bad enough sitting through a red flag in a regular race, but I think there's something about the fact that, you know, that these kids are, you know, 14, 15 years old that makes it, I don't know, it makes it extra worse. My wife and I were really, really suffering. But it looks like one of the riders, Vieux, a French rider, relatively okay. Broken pelvis, which is never good, but it's, you know, something that he can recover from. And a couple of other kids went down. But in the end, I think everybody was relatively okay. And I see here in the notes something about somebody making a debut in Navarra, which I think is coming up this weekend, but having to meet some minimum age. But that's not a problem.
Rory Skinner.
We can make new rules for that.
Rory Skinner, he was born in 2001, which even Harry thinks is young.
Like 2001. That's yesterday.
Well, the amazing thing is, this is a kid who's going to make his CV debut at Navarra, and he is a year younger than me and my daughter, who it's like, what?
Yeah.
She's 15 in a couple of months, and it's scary. 2 years' time, she'll be driving.
You know, this reminds me, Martin, and I'm going to ask you if this happened to you too. When I started watching racing probably mid-80s, and didn't. I think it was because we didn't have access to the same amount, the same deluge of information, you know, that we do now, obviously. So I didn't really focus on, you know, the age of the riders, for example. And I always just assumed, because these guys are doing something awesome and I wasn't back then, that they were, you know, much older guys than me. And then come to find out later in life that Schwantz, Doohan, several of these guys are, you know, roughly my age, and some of the guys that... Or even a bit younger, which doesn't feel good.
No, I know. Kevin Schwantz is like my age.
Yeah. Well, you and I are the same age.
He might be a year older. Yeah, I'm 50 in November. So
just turn the corner.
November the 25th, if anyone wants to send me anything nice.
There you go.
But yeah, he's yeah, I know, it's weird. And I think, no. That was, I don't know, it's weird. footballers, pop stars that you remember when you were growing up, you just assume they were 10, 15 years old. Like you say, because they've managed to achieve this thing that I will soon. And then you realize, no, I'm not going to. I'm just going to be a squaddy. Yeah, no, I absolutely get that. And instantly, Harry gives us an update on the Rookies' Cup. It's been dominated by Big Bad Bo Bentschneider. What a great name.
Wow.
Bo Bentschneider is a Dutch rider, most likely going to partner Brad Binder in the IO squad in 2016. Apparently, he's quite tall, so he may struggle a bit on the Moto3s, but neither Miller nor Kent are short, and they did okay in the lightweight class. So, well, they certainly have. yeah, I mean, at least Brad and Bo will be able to converse in Dutch slash Afrikaans, I guess. I assume Brad is an Afrikaans speaker. He may not be. Yeah, a bit of a weird one. Jorge Lorenzo designed the Aragon trophies, and luckily he won one. He then had breakfast with it, and you can check his Twitter for the photograph. Strange boy.
Thank you. Thank you for saying it so that I don't have to.
Yeah. Basically, it was a wall, which you think is quite clever, actually.
Yeah,
I think
kind of cool.
He has captured it. If you saw a trophy and said, which race was that for, and you saw that one he designed, you would immediately know it's Aragon, because it's the big stone wall with the big blocks, you know. So actually, I shouldn't sneer. I wasn't sneering, but I shouldn't take the mickey. It was quite a good design, but...
I think having designed it is very cool. Like you said, it's on the mark. I think the fact that Lorenzo is looking to sort of pad his Renaissance man resume is just kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know if you follow soccer, football, but there was a... I'm going to forget his name. Horrible little footballer. He was a Liverpool born and bred lad. Do you know what? I've gone completely blank, and all the British fans will know. Joey Barton. And he had a Twitter account, and he used to try and look deep and philosophical by tweeting quotes from Plato and Aristotle and Machiavelli and this. And you think, yeah, do you know, I know how to use Google as well. Because he couldn't really do anything in context. And it was just like, what are you trying to do? And I sometimes get the same feeling that Lorenzo with his, you know, he does a painting and then he auctions it at Riders for Health. And it does really well, and he raised a lot of money. But I think that's because of who's done it, not
because
of, you know, the painting. I might be proved wrong. I mean, you know, after he dies, we might suddenly find that he was a great artist, because that's what happened to Van Gogh, wasn't it?
That could happen.
Good news for anyone who might be attending World Superbikes in Qatar, possibly with a recorder in their pocket, like me. That's right, it's not good news, because he doesn't like doing interviews with people he doesn't know. But Max Biaggi is wildcarding in Qatar. This was kind of given away by Johnny Ray in a Twitter exchange, graciously accepting Max's congratulations on the title and saying, looking forward to, I think he said, riding with you or racing with you in Qatar. So it was like, okay, so that'll be Max wildcarding. Looks like he's going to do it. We assume, obviously, it'll be on an Aprilia. Yeah, that'll be fun.
Interesting. The boy is, you know, I kind of wonder, I hope, I've never been a huge Max fan. I appreciate the talent. I think that the personality is kind of, I don't know, a bit strange.
Bald. Yeah.
A bit bald. But I just hope he doesn't end up the same way as Troy Bayliss. Broken.
You mean Australian? Oh, is Troy that broken?
Well, I mean, you know, he went and did this USA flat track thing.
Oh,
and,
shit, yeah.
And got himself pretty hurt. Then he went back to Australia, and I think he got hurt again. And it's just kind of, it's almost like the afflictions of an addict. You know, he can't stop, even though it's proving to be very, very bad for him.
Yeah, yeah. I can't see pain being a problem for Troy Bayliss somehow. He just seems to sort of, I'd imagine he's a bit Doon-esque in that.
Yeah, yeah, and he's happily tweeting, you know, some pretty gory, surgery pics and, you know, Frankenstein stitches pics and all that. But you just kind of think, Troy, you know, yes, he's a young man because he's younger than me, and that's still very young, but he's, you know, I don't think he should be getting beat up like that. And I hope Biaggi doesn't get it either.
No, I mean, he did crash, didn't he, at Sepang when he went in the second race, I seem to remember, but he didn't get hurt at all.
Right.
I was going to say he doesn't crash that often, but yeah, actually, I'm thinking, what am I talking about? Speaking of crashing, mountain biking apparently is as dangerous for MotoGP riders as motocross. And Marc Marquez, this news has only broken today, this being Wednesday, the 30th September. Marquez has broken his left hand on Tuesday riding a mountain bike. He had an operation today. Today? Yes, this morning. And the news broke around lunchtime. They said it was very successful, the surgery, and he's now starting post-op rehab. If it goes well, they expect him to be at Motegi. The fifth metacarpal was broken. And earlier in the year, remember, he broke his left pinky.
Yep.
Dirt track. His mate ran over his hand, or his ex-mate. Marquez has DNF'd in five races this year, the most in any season since he started in 125s back in 2008. So, yeah, can't help him.
I don't believe in fate or luck, but it's amazing how things go from one year to the next.
Oh, yeah. 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 But I guess when these guys are riding on a knife edge, pushing to the edge of the cliff every time, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're almost crashing their brains out 10 times a weekend.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of times you see him lose it, save it, lose it, save it, you know, I would just be leaving a stream of brown adrenaline behind me if that ever happened to me. But I just think the bike this year, we know it wasn't quite sorted at the beginning. And that's enough. Do you remember Casey Stoner getting so despondent about the Ducati, saying, he said, I don't mind crashing when I know what I've done. But you look at my data, I've done exactly the same thing, lap after lap after lap. And then suddenly on one lap, it lets go.
Yeah.
And he said, I cannot ride like that. The only solution to that is to slow down. And then I'm mid-pack and I'm not doing my job. You know, and I think it's similar with someone like Marquez. He only knows how to go to the limit.
Well, that's all he's there for.
Yeah, he keeps slipping over it.
Yeah, it's funny also that, you know, sort of the public perception, and it's funny that you mentioned Casey. If, you know, if Casey's having a rough year with a bike that's not doing what he wants and he's, you know, crashing his brains out every other race, he's going to get some stick for it. And yeah. Marquez is still, you know, a golden child of MotoGP and can kind of get away with doing anything.
I'm not sure. I think some of the slight shows of petulance this year.
I'll go with you there. I'll agree. Yeah. It's wearing off.
I think we're back to this thing, the deep, I hate using hardcore fans because it makes us sound like we're trying to promote ourselves as some kind of elite. Motorpod listeners, the co-hosts, the journalists, the people who will go, you know, if money's no object for them, to every round if they can.
Yeah, it's not elite. You know, it's a sickness.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a disease, and I love it. But, you know, the people who, sorry, kids, sorry, it might be your birthday, but MotoGP's on. I'm watching telly. You can ring Esther Anson and childcare as many times as you like. I'm still watching the fucking MotoGP. So sit down and shut up. I don't care that it's your A-levels, you know, or whatever. Those sorts of people, I think, are looking at him with a slightly raised eyebrow going, you're good, but maybe you're not quite as good as you and a lot of other people thought you were.
See, I haven't started doubting the talent because I still think that he's spectacularly special.
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm just a bit over the personality sometimes. Like you're saying, it seems the petulance.
But I don't think the magic that he seemed to have in season one and some luck. I mean, he won that title from Lorenzo by 4 points. And Lorenzo had some horrendous luck with the collarbone break. And then at the next race, when maybe he shouldn't have raced, but he had to because he's chasing the title, he broke it again so hard that he bent the titanium plate. I mean, I can't imagine how that feels. You know, he had a lot of luck. Last year, he was unbelievable. But I'm starting to wonder if, and we go back to Casey Stoner, one of the most talented riders I've ever seen ride. But in 2007, all the planets aligned. In 2014, for Marquez, all the planets aligned. For Rossi, All the Planets Aligned in 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 8, 9, you know? It's like, yeah, he's Marquez is stunningly talented kid, and we've been singing that since Estoril 2010, Birth of a Legend and all that. But I don't think he's beyond what we've seen. He's just another of those absolute greats. He's a Mick Doohan or a Valentino Rossi. Very different. He's a Casey Stoner. He's a Jorge Lorenzo. He's not a Kenny Roberts. Well, actually, I suppose you could say he is, because he has changed the way that all of them ride.
Yep.
So that might be a fair point. Maybe not quite as dramatically as Kenny Roberts did. Check your history books, kids. But, yeah, I don't know. I just think this year we're finding out that, yeah, he's really good, but he still needs... He can't. Who was it? Was it Hailwood? Phil Reed, I think it was, when they said famously you could throw him on anything that he'd never ridden and he'd win. You know, now obviously he didn't do it all the time, but he was so adaptable, whereas Ago needed it made how he wanted it, and it had to be tuned to him. He couldn't tune to it. And I just think Marquez might be not more Ago than Reed, but somewhere in between. Whereas I think when he first arrived, we thought, God, this kid's going to be able to do anything.
We'll see. We will. I still think that there's something special there. But we'll see. I think special, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about, you know, changing the way people ride and Kenny Roberts, et cetera. I think he's, it's almost like he's, not that he's reintroduced flat tracking, because, you know, it's been there before him, it'll be there after him, but he's reintroduced sort of riding the big GP bike like a flat tracker.
Yeah. Yeah. And that takes real brains, and that takes someone who understands exactly what he's doing. And don't get me wrong, I'm not getting a downer on Marquez. I just think when he arrived in such a, oh my God, this kid can do anything. And do you remember that first 2013 wet race he had at Le Mans? And he was down to about fifth or sixth, and you could visibly watch him learning how to ride it. And I can't remember where he came. I don't think he won, but he may even have crashed. I can't remember. But you could just see him getting, okay, right, so when I do that, this happened. Okay, right, no, I can do that. Right, so next lap round, I'm going to go a bit faster. Yeah, no, I can still do that. And it was fascinating to watch. And that is a rare talent. Yeah. That really is. But I don't think he's otherworldly beyond someone like Rossi or Lorenzo or Stoner or Doohan or Rainey. I think he's one of that very, very, very small group of elite riders who will leave their names carved in, you know, the legend of MotoGP. But I think when he arrived, we almost, and I got caught up in it as much as anyone else, I think it was almost this thing of, it's like he's on a PlayStation where you're always a bit faster than, you know, all the other ones you're riding against.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. He's got a few years to prove us, you know, right or wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he is someone who you might look at and think, wow, Rossi is, I suspect he's going to stay until he can beat Ago's record. Which, considering the era that Rossi has been riding in, would be just cosmically greater an achievement. Because Ago used to ride in multiple races each race weekend, and, you know, and he had a really, 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 really much better bike than everyone else for a lot of his career.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I mean, if he can, you know, right now there's the doubt of, you know, who's the greatest just because of the numbers. But if he can take that number in today's era, it's, you know, a completely different achievement. And if you look at just the top level victories, well, he's already, you know, far ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. We had some racing this weekend.
Yes, we did.
Moto3, Enea Bastianini got another pole position from Miguel Oliveira, and leaving it really late, Danny Kent got on the front row, which I think was really seen as really important. And it was strange. His penultimate flying lap, he just kept pulling over. And it was like, what? Are you trying to stop someone else following you? Are you trying to wait for a fast rider to follow? They were saying that back straight, if you don't get a toe, you're losing quarter to half a second, which doesn't sound much, but it is when you look at these qualifying times, you know. I mean, Jesus, we've got to go down to 14th before you're more than a second from the leader from pole position. So it is really critical. But yeah, he almost threw it away. It was incredible. Jorge Martin, Jorge Navarro, and Nicolò Antonelli were the second row. Alexis Mansell, Efren Vasquez, and Philip Urquell qualifying again well on the third row. Romano Fenati back to his sort of, you know, Valentino Rossi fan club. I'm going to qualify in the fourth row just because I can. Was the qualifying. We came to the race. It was all dry. And it was a typical beat up each other kind of run for the first, well, 19 laps. Miguel Oliveira was up there a fair bit. We had Bastianini always around the front. He never drop back very far. Danny Kent was down in eighth at one point. But it was the old peloton.
He was back and forth and back and forth the whole time.
Yeah, then he started moving his way to the front and it was looking quite good. And we came into the penultimate lap and we had, oh God, who was he? Oh, it was Brad Binder, wasn't it? Brad Binder was up front. And again, it's really tight group. By then we had Oliveira, Kent and Bastianini tucked in just behind him. Efren Vasquez was around, very much at the same time. Navarro was having a great run. And then as we started the last lap, Oliveira made a little bit of a break. We had Kent and, was it Navarro just behind him? Yeah. And then we had Brad Binder and Bastianini in fourth and fifth, really close together, coming onto that back straight. I don't know if you saw this.
From where I was, I could just see Kent when he got launched.
Well, just before that, Bastianini basically clipped the back of Brad Binder's bike, taking them both down.
Ah, okay. Yeah, we didn't see that. Okay.
Yeah, it was a racing incident. I don't think there was any doubt about that. It was just really bad luck for Brad Binder. He was about to have a cracking result. But he was so desperately, I think, trying to make sure that he could catch and pass Danny Kent. Maybe let the brakes off a little bit early, or he didn't put them on till a little bit too late. But he just caught the back of Brad Binder. And then they were walking off, and you could see Bastianini quite animatedly doing hand gestures, but not aggressively. It was kind of like, no, what happened was, right, see, I went like this,
there I was.
Went like that. And there I was, and then suddenly there we were together. I'm really sorry. Brad Binder seemed quite sort of like, yeah, all right, bastard. And so it can't be true, the old thing that you've never met a nice South African, because he obviously is one. So then we had Oliveira, Binder, and Oliveira, Navarro, and Danny Kent. Danny Kent sitting in third place, and they came to that long last corner that goes on forever, and he high-sided.
Amazing.
And it was like, I mean, he's a racer, I know. And he said Navarro had run wide. I could see 20 points instead of 16. And he got flipped.
Big time.
And it was just kind of like, oh, okay. So that's basically had no effect on the pointy end of the title race at all. Romano Fenati picked up. Probably what was rather unexpected. I mean, he was sixth or seventh at the start of that lap. He finished third. 0.2 ahead of Efren Vasquez. Philip Urquell was fifth. Really good finish. We lost both the title contenders, which means no change. Danny Kent still on 234 points, and Enya Bastianini still 55 points behind on 179. So nothing changed. But Miguel Oliveira is now 20 points behind Bastianini. That, and only 4 points behind him, amazingly, is Romano Fenati.
Yeah, it's amazing that Fenati is that close.
Yeah, Harry and I were talking about this the other week, where you think someone's had a really good season, someone else had a really bad one, and then you look and think, I'm talking bollocks, because, you know, rider B is actually ahead of rider A.
It was strange. Funny when we were watching the Moto 3 the Moto 3 ceremony from just behind Parc Fermé. And the guy that I was there with, the Dorna guy, turned to me at one point and said, he said, I can't believe that Fanati's actually up there. He said, nobody understands that guy. Nobody's happy with him, which I thought was really interesting.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, we kept hearing rumors, didn't we, that Rossi and Uccio were getting a little bit, okay, we've kind of, you need to step up and start being more consistent. Yes, you've got flashes of brilliance, but I just keep thinking about Chiari, Riki Chiari, and this, you know, when everything's in the right place, he can be a race winner and a title contender. And then he'll just go for months being and also ran.
But at least
really
at least Chiari looks dour about it and isn't jumping around and being a happy Italian when he's, you know, being a dickhead on the track. Fanati combines both.
Yeah, that's true.
Which really makes you wonder, what's he thinking?
Yeah.
You know, out there qualifying absolutely. 17th and, you know, doing who knows what during qualifying, and then just, you know, being a happy guy in the paddock.
I think something else worth mentioning in Moto3, Fabio Quartararo is still 8th, tied on points with Jorge Navarro now, despite having missed a round or two. Carol Hanniker, 17th, 33 points.
Yeah.
Not a good season at all. And I think Carol Hanniker might find himself, I can't remember if it's been confirmed. Is he with a different team next year? I think he is.
Yeah, I don't know. But he needs to do some thinking about what he does, because he's often up front at the beginning of the race, but not very often at the end.
No. Then we went to Moto2, and Johann Zarco, slightly subdued weekend for him at the start, but he still seemed to be there or thereabouts. Tito Rybak got pole, Alex Rins, Johann Zarco, so again, the top three in the title race were the front row. Sam Lowes and Takaki Nakagami, Alex Marquez, continuing to show signs of great improvement, at least in qualifying. Row two with Folger Luthi and Axel Pons on the third row. Sandro Cortese, I still keep waiting for him to wake up and start doing something, was 10th. Corsi Baldessari with him. Sayarin, Agata and Callio made up the fifth row. But this ended up being a curtailed race because the aforementioned Dominic Agata had a really nasty crash. He did knock himself out, but he was okay. I've not seen any particular news about injuries, so I think he's okay, but he was knocked out, so obviously for the rider's safety, whilst he was treated, the race was red flagged. And because it was only, was it lap two, I think?
It was, I think it was, it was during the second lap at turn 15.
Mm. Yeah. They just said, right, that's it. You're back to, you haven't done enough. I think they have to have done three laps before it would be your position at the end of the previous lap is your grid position. So they just went back to qualifying, which was really pissing off, or would have really pissed off. I think it was Sayarin and made his way up to about fourth. And he was like, no, sorry, mate, you're going back to 13th.
Right.
And there was a gap on the grid, obviously in 14th place. But they said, there were some other people involved in the crash. They said, if you can get your bike fixed, you can restart. I can't remember if that did affect anyone or not. But we went out with a reduced grid, certainly with Agata missing, for 14 laps. And, it was a strange race. But it wasn't actually. It was a good race up front. We had Alex Rins leading Tito Rybak and Sam Lowes, and the two of them were dicing and going past and kicking back and all that. What was strange was Zarco.
Was just sort of nowhere. Back in, I think, fifth or sixth? Made a couple passes, seventh. But
It dropped to eighth at one point. I think the highest he got to, was sixth, which is where he finished.
Yeah, you know what's funny about the race is, because I remember, you know, watching it from the stands, and it, and also on the big screen, so you could see what's happening on the rest of the track. And it seemed like, you know, an interesting race. They were very close. There was passing. The lap chart paints a completely different picture.
It looks dull, doesn't it?
It looks really dull. There's, you know, one change of lead.
Lead.
And then Sam was third the whole time, and Folger was fourth the whole time, which, you know, paints a very different picture.
But of course, that lap chart, all it does is says who was in the lead at the end of that.
At the end of the lap, exactly.
How many times have we seen it? Someone overtakes through the twisty bits. They get to the back straight, which is a long one, and the guy with the more powerful bike or the bike
comes right back.
Comes past. So it looks like he led every lap, but actually, it's a completely different story.
Yeah, there was a lot more happening.
Even. But Tito Rabat did hold out for the win. Alex Rins was second. Sam Lowes was a very good third. Folger, Luthi, Zarco. Six. I mean, Johan Zarco, again, almost in a Lorenzo-esque sort of painfully honest thing, said, yeah, it's kind of getting to me, the title thing, because it's not quite tied up. And people keep saying to me, yeah, but, you know, you're going to do it. He said, well, I can't be sure of that until it's finished.
Yeah.
We lost Alex Marquez. Went down, had a little bit of a Teddy tantrum fit.
Yeah, he did. Almost as good as Marx.
Yeah, not quite as good as Luis Alonso. Luis Alonso was getting all... he was going all Rita Hayworth on everybody. Of course, we'd already lost Dominic Agutter. Edgar Pons was racing for Itil Trans Racing Team. We lost him as well. He was having a look at it before he comes in next year. Xavier Simeon, Julian Simon, and Federico Foligni were the other fallers. But the standings, Zarco is still 78 points in the lead. There's four races left, the 78-point gap. He needs to DNF three of them, and Tito win them all.
Yeah, big ask.
Yeah, and then, you know, after that, if that were to happen, God forbid, and I only say that because I wouldn't want someone to DNF three races. And I think there would be an element of tragedy about someone losing the title from the position he's in. And he's ridden so well all year.
Well, and especially for the Zarco story, you know, he's really gotten his head screwed on right this year. You know, he's not the character that we knew before. And
no.
Yeah, I don't like to ever hear the word deserved, because I think, you know, the only thing that's deserved in racing is to win if you finish first. But I think he's done a lot of the work to deserve the championship this year.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Tito's looking a lot more secure now in 22 points clear of Axel Rins. Tito on 206, Alex Rins on 184. Sam Lowes on 144, 2 points ahead of Tom Luthi. And that's your top five. Jonas Folger having a good season, but without ever being particularly dramatic. And then we went to Q1 is becoming one of my favourite sessions of MotoGP, because there's always something thrown up, usually by Yoni Hernandez, and he did it again. I don't know if you saw the progress of this. Dovi put in a absolutely blistering lap, and he pulled into the pits with like 2 minutes to go. Obviously sure he's done enough. Well, he goes on to a slowdown lap. So he's obviously coming in. He's running down pit lane, and they said his little repeater on his dashboard will be saying, yeah, P1. And I don't think it's able to change unless he goes over the line. So as he's coming down pit lane, he's P1. But Danilo Petrucci put in a blistering lap and took P1 off him, which put him in the danger position of position two. And Yoni Hernandez, on his last lap, pulled out an absolute blinder and by 66 thousandths of a second pushed Andrea Dovizioso out. And I'm a huge admirer of Dovi. I think he's a great guy and I think he's a great rider. But I did have to chuckle. How many times have we seen this? It ain't over till it's over.
Yeah, remember the look on Maverick Vinales' face a few races ago?
Yeah, absolutely.
Same thing.
Absolutely. And the look on Alessio Spargaro's face.
The look of relief.
Going flipping heck. Because wasn't that something like 11,000ths? He was faster than Maverick. Like, whoa, there, but for the grace of God, and 11,000ths of a second go I. Scott Redding was fourth, very good. Eugene Laverty, cracking, qualified fifth. And as Neil Hodgson kept pointing out to him, oh, that's the first time you've out-qualified. In fact, no, sorry, it wasn't qualifying, it was about racing. But Nicky has basically beaten him at every race. So that was a monkey to get off his back. Stefan Bradl continues to impress on that Aprilia. He came in seventh. Yeah, and there you go. Tony Elias was last. No surprises. You know, he's just back to it. Then we went to Q2. And, yeah, wow. Marquez. Yeah, Marquez and Lorenzo both got into the 146.
Yeah, amazing, amazing laps.
Mm. Now, and Lorenzo held the all-time fastest lap ever on a motorcycle going around that track for about 30 seconds, and then Marquez took it off him. But Andrea Iannone, with a re-dislocated left shoulder, got third. And you know what I found interesting? Front row, Honda, Yamaha, Ducati. Second row, Pol Espargaró, so satellite Yamaha. Pedrosa, Honda, Rossi, factory Yamaha. The next row, Suzuki with Espargaró, LCR Honda, Carazzolo, and a Ducati with Danilo Petrucci. And the fourth row, Bradley Smith, Yamaha, Yanni Hernandez, Ducati, Maverick Viñales, Suzuki. You know, every row except row two had three different makes.
They're mixing it up. Yeah, that's good.
That's healthy. I like that. And we were off. And again, Lorenzo. I mean, this Matt Oxley makes a very good point in this week's blog he does on Automoto Sport, saying the Yamaha anti-wheelie is so effective now that it's negated the Honda advantage out of corners and from the start. And again, Lorenzo got the whole shot straight in, bang, thank you very much. Marquez tucked in behind him. Iannone, he gets good starts. Iannone was third at the end of the first lap. We had Pedrosa, Rossi, and then everyone else coming behind them. And it didn't last very long. It lasted about a lap and a half. And Marc Marquez, all his own work, threw it at the kitty litter again. It's unbelievable.
Well, and you know what I thought was interesting was that, well, where did he fall down?
Oh goodness me, you put me on the spot.
That's all right. Turn 12.
Yeah.
And that's the same corner that he almost ran into the back of Danny when he then came back and clipped the wire and all of that.
Oh yeah, yeah. The rear brake sensor and everything.
So the same corner. He seems to have, you know, I don't know. It's hard to draw a line based on only 2 points. I mean, you can, but maybe it's not a good idea, but he's rushing very, very quickly, too quickly into turn 12, you know, kind of two crucial times twice in a row.
Yeah. And he was okay. And there was a brilliant tweet from a listener. I cannot remember who it is. I'm so sorry. In fact, I'm going to try and find it. Glenn, just talk for a minute whilst I just quickly fire my phone up and have a look for this.
Well, I think then, and on, you know, the perspective that we had from up in the stands was, you know, that this had turned into a real snoozer. You know, we were watching, Lorenzo had, I think it was, you know, 2.5 to 3 seconds, and they were constantly showing him where Danny was. And, you know, we were all, you know, sort of settling in for a very, very, very boring race. You know, there was a bit of...
And that's a point that Matt actually makes about Lorenzo and his, when it's right, his dominance. All six races that he's won this season, he's led every single lap. Yeah. It was Stephen Higgins, going back to the Marc Marquez crash. Stephen Higgins tweeted to me, when Mark ran back to his bike and just started swearing at it, I wanted him to go off screen and come back with a tree branch. Now, for listeners who've never seen Fawlty Towers, which was a 1970s comedy with John Cleese from Monty Python, that may not mean anything. If you can track down Fawlty Towers, and I can't remember what episode it was, but it's Fawlty Towers, or it'll be on YouTube somewhere, Basil Fawlty and Car Rant or something like that. Basically, his car breaks down and he's really urgent. He gets back to his hotel. He's a hotelier, and an awful hotelier, very English. And his car breaks down, and he keeps trying it, and he gets out of the car and says, right, I'm going to count to three. If you don't start the count of three, you've had it. And, of course, he stood outside the car, so there's no chance it's going to start. And he goes off and comes back with a tree and starts beating his car with a tree. And I just thought that was brilliant. So for those, it's not funny if you have to explain it, I know that. But for those who remember Fawlty Towers, Stephen Higgins, you are a comedy genius. That was brilliant. But yeah, it. In fact, people were tweeting, well, this isn't living up to Moto 3 or Moto 2 standards, and snooze.
Well, and for a while it wasn't. For a while it was a bit of a snooze.
It was. It was for like the middle two, well, the first two thirds, really.
Yeah.
There were some great battles going on, you could see from the timing screen further back, but we never got to see those.
Right. And then I think the other thing, we at the track, and I think everybody in the world, was watching it thinking, well, you know, we know what's happening here. We know what the script is already. You know, Valentino's just going to, you know, not roast his tires. He's just going to follow Danny, and then he'll make a decisive pass and he'll be gone.
Yeah. And again, we're back to the lap chart. From lap 4 to lap 23, which is last lap, the top 5 did not change places. There was no changes from lap 4 to lap 23. That, you see that and you think, snooze fest. Absolutely, it was not.
No.
Because Valentino caught Danny and started trying to get past him. Well, he got past him quite a lot of times for a corner.
For half a corner. And, I mean, the only way he could get past was over the edge lunges.
Hmm. Let the brakes off early or don't brake, you know, enough, early enough, and run wide. And but Danny was reading him. And
yeah, he was.
We have seen this before. In Lorenzo's championship year, was it 2010 or was it 12? 2012, I think, at Jerez. And I remember thinking, wow, Danny.
Yeah, he fought back hard.
It was the year that he'd not broken with Alberto Puig, but he'd stepped away. Honda had stepped in and said, we want a little bit more distance between you. You can deal with all this commercial stuff, but we don't want you in the paddock with him. And I was thinking, what a great move that's been, because wow, he can fight. And then he went away again. But we'll talk about Danny in a moment. But man, he was fighting, but he was being so canny as well.
He was smart. And he was very smart about it. He knew when to fight and when not to.
It reminded me of Troy Bayliss talking about Max Biaggi. He said, I knew he was going to come past me there. Because he could, because his bike had a higher speed, but he had to put the brakes on and I knew he wouldn't. So let him go in, let him go wide, tuck inside. Thank you very much. Look over your shoulder. And I'm still convinced Bailey said wanker as he went past him. Yeah, wanker. It was really good. But on the last lap, something strange did happen because Danny looked like he made a mistake and ran a bit wide, and Rossi saw the gap, went, I'm having some of that, brakes off, throttle open, oh shit, now I'm running wide, and Danny just cut back again.
Yeah, that was the last corner, right?
Yeah. The start they of both that yep. long, I mean, I don't know if you can call it a hairpin, it's more like a bloody, I don't know, long bent thing.
Yeah, it's 120 kilometer per hour hairpin, yeah.
Yeah, but brilliant, and You just cannot help love Rossi afterwards. He's still sweating, still in my leathers, heat of battle in my eyes. Interview. He was so gracious and he just said, yeah. Because I think Gavin Emmett said to him, you know, well, you played all your cards there. I think about 5 of them. He went, yeah, that's all I had. I played them all. I had nothing left. And he said, I did everything I could do, and Danny was stronger. And you just think, do you know what? No wonder people love Rossi. There was no, well, yeah, my tires were going off. Yeah, there was this. No, there was nothing. And, you know, nothing like, oh, I'm a bigger guy. You know, I'm a bit slower than him. He just said, no, I did everything I could. I tried my hardest, and we were really good, but he was a bit better.
Yeah.
Iannone was 4th. Dovi came a very, very good 5th, coming up from 13th. He qualified. Alessio Spargaro was 6th. Cal Crutchlow 7th. And we said we wouldn't do this, you know, going all the way down.
Yeah, I was impressed to see Alessio in 6th at a track, you know, as fast with a big long downhill straight like Aragon.
So. Yeah, Maverick was suffering, I think. Scott Redding was down. He was in 11th. Scott Redding was 12th. He had a disappointing weekend. Eugene Laverty came 14th, one place ahead of Nicky Hayden at last. Sad to see Loris Baz outside the points. Jack Miller outside the points. Tony Lewis was last. There you go. But the title of this week's show, I think, is going to be that's why he's got a Honda. And Harry's 2 cents. Harry writes, people doubt Pedrosa, but he's beaten the best of the best. Stoner, Rossi, Lorenzo, Marquez. When they've been at their peak, Danny has beaten them all fair and square. He's won on 990s, 800s and 1000s. Okay, he hasn't won a title and he probably never will. But to class him as, or to not class him as one of the best riders of the modern era is naive. Aragon proved that he can still do it. He's just really unlucky with injuries and tire warmers and Hector Barbera. Cough,
and everything.
And the 2015, and, you know, stuck throttles and all that. And the 2015 Honda he's on isn't an easy bike to ride. Marquez had to switch frames and he's still crashing. Danny Pedrosa is a modern day Randy Mamola, and not the big crash, big save Randy Mamola, but the early Randy you could battle with Lawson, Sheen, Roberts, etc., and win. So I did what I like to do, and I did some stat crunching. And this is Danny's years in from now downwards in MotoGP. So this is the rider performance thing. So far this season, he's missed three races so far at the beginning of the year when he had that arm pump surgery, which some people started saying this could be the end. And we all thought it could be the end.
Yep.
Now, he hasn't. His first race back, he ended up 16th when he fell off and remounted. But at Qatar, he was 6th. Since the 16th, which was the first race back, and I haven't put which races were which because they change year on year, he's come 4th, 3rd, 8th, 2nd, 4th, 5th, 5th, 9th, 2nd. Now, this is his worst season he's had since he came into MotoGP. Well, at the moment, we'll wait to see how that goes. The lowest points he's ever scored was 215 in his first year, and he still won 2 races that year. You know, this kid has won races. If you look at where he's finished in the title race since he started in 125s in 2001, I'll very quickly run you some numbers. It won't take long because they're not very big numbers. 8th, 3rd, 1st, 1st, 1st. The first three there were 1, 2, 5. 8th, 3rd, 1st. Double 250 winner. Intermotor GP. 5th, 2nd, 3rd, 3rd, 2nd, 4th, 2nd, 3rd, 4th. And at the moment he's sitting 7th, but he's missed 3 races. That is stunning form. But, and this is my rebuttal to Harry a little bit. It's not a rebuttal because I'm not disagreeing with him completely. Danny has, in the past, had a, in my opinion, deserved reputation for being, one, injury-prone. You could argue that's not his fault. And you look at his seasons. He misses races most seasons through injury. Or he's riding injured. Or he starts the season injured. That's not toughness as in mental toughness. That's just his bones break easier than some other people's. Or maybe he's just really unlucky. But he has had a reputation, in my opinion, deserved that, like you said before, once someone gets past him, that's it. And that, this is the funny thing with Danny. I remember that race at Jerez. Now, Lorenzo did beat him. He closed him down, I think, 2 seconds in a lap. He caught up with him, got past. Danny came back. And it was like, wow, he's done the Troy Bayliss. Best time to retake someone who's just gone past. He was at the very next corner. He did it a couple of times, but he still lost. This time, he's done it with Rossi. I've got to be honest, they're the only 2 times that really stand out in my mind of Danny doing that back, forth, back, forth, back, forth, kicking, punch. I can think of more races that Ian Oney's been in where he's done that to Rossi or Marquez or Lorenzo than I can with Danny.
Yeah, yeah. But what's interesting is to see that he can do it.
Yeah. Now, that's the good thing. The good news is, his arm is clearly, because that's got to be a physical racetrack. That's got to be tough. Motegi will be another big test because it's so hard acceleration, hard brake, hard acceleration, hard brake. But his arm is fixed. It has worked. And, you know, good for him. He's got a seat next year. If he doesn't perform, he won't have a seat in 2017. It's as simple as that. If there's a better option to bring through, you know, it's not like Danny's being bankrolled by some billionaire father. It's not like that. You know, I don't know what his background is, but he's there purely on merit. He may well be a really good development rider. We don't know. you know, he's a nice kid. You cannot dislike Danny Pedrosa. He's had some horrendous luck. He possibly should have been world champion in 2012. He got stuck throttle and crashed out of Motegi. And there we go. Lorenzo got his second title. But this weekend was really interesting. My point I said in the email amongst the co-hosts, and you may have seen, was to Harry, was, but he needs to be able to, he needs to do that again and again. You know,
yeah, that needs to become normal behavior, not just, you know, interesting.
And he's young enough to be able to go for another, you know, God, if he follows Ross's example, he's probably got another, what is Danny, 28, 29?
I think 28, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a year older than Lorenzo, isn't he? He could have another 6, 7, 8 years in him, might have another 10 years in him.
Well, he's done, nine so far or 10 so far.
Yeah.
So it could happen. I mean, it would be a very long career, but...
It would be. But I don't think he's got the raw pace to do what he's... When he has won races, often it's because he's got in the groove, like Stoner can, like Lorenzo can, and he's just pulled away at the front and you can't catch him.
Well, that used to be his MO, you're right. It used to be, like, yeah, you know, like what Lorenzo's doing now.
But maybe this is it. And I was thinking about this. I thought, well, if he's realised, look, I haven't got the pace to dominate these guys the way I've been able to in the past, maybe he's thought, I've got to learn to do what they do, to fight.
Right.
That's what I've always liked about Lorenzo. Yes, he is Mr. You know, metronomic, out front, perfect laps, within a hundredth of a second, every lap, you know. But he can dust it up. He can fight. We've seen it. Okay, in his battles with Rossi, often he comes off worst, but he can get back past and mix it up. Stoner definitely could. Marquez absolutely definitely can. Rossi's the master of it. But Danny, we haven't seen that very often. Maybe he's learned it. Maybe this is the one where he goes, right, yeah, no, I can do that.
I hope so. I hope so. It would be good to see a lot of that next year.
Absolutely. Because at the moment, if I was Nakamoto-san, I would be looking, thinking, okay, so if I want to bring someone else in, who have I got available in the Honda stable that's better than Danny? And at the moment...
Nobody right now.
I can't see anybody. I think Cal Crutchlow is a very different kind of rider and would bring something different, but I don't think he's as fast as Danny Pedrosa.
We haven't seen it anyway. That's for sure.
No, not that we've seen. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to tell until they're on equal equipment. But right, now on to the bit. I don't know. Do you want to go? Because I'm about to talk about MCM Fantasy League. Do you want to just sit there with your fingers in your ears going, la, 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 la?
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that I've been paying a lot of attention to the MCN Fantasy League.
Yeah, I think you've still got Marco Melandri in your team.
Very good.
We've got Roberto Bobbio has returned to the top, and he's pulled a little bit of a lead. Roberto is 127th in the overall competition, first in hours. He's on 1640 points. Paul Simpson retakes second place. On 16.24, there's a 16-point gap, which is the biggest one we've seen for a while, but that's nothing when you consider how many points are available every weekend. John Crawford with the 74 race team, a third with 16.20. In the host, me and Scott have both had Lorenzo and Iannone, so we both moved up together. We're joint 19th, both on 15.54 points. Harry is 32 points behind us on 15.22. He's 29th overall. Jules, 79th with 13.35. Dave is 129th with 12.12. Jim is 195th. He dropped one place or raised one place. I can't remember which. 1,018 points. Len, you're 205th with 954 points. But if you're lucky, you may be able to get to 1,000 before the end of the season, hopefully.
Right. Let me. I've got some really good excuses, but they're in my excuse book that I don't have handy, so that's going to have to wait until next time.
No worries. No worries. Races coming up. This coming weekend, we have the BSB Silverstone Showdown races 3 and 4. The races on Sunday, the 4th of October, and World Superbikes are at Manicourt. Not a track I particularly enjoy watching. It's a bit... what do they call him in America? Cookie cutter sort of track. It's got interesting bits. It's got that massive runoff areas though everywhere, and it just sort of, I don't know. I just don't remember there being any particularly good races at Manicourt. I'm probably wrong, and there's been some great ones, but that's also second to fourth. And a week later, the MotoGP paddock start the flyaway, bang, 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 3 weekends running on the 9th to the 11th of October at Motegi. Oh my goodness, it's all coming down to the wire. Did we mention the standings? Lorenzo is now only 14 points behind.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, exactly. 100 points left. And Rossi is 79 clear of Marquez.
Predictions, Martin.
For Motegi?
I was thinking of the championship.
Do you know what? I really don't know. And I love the fact that I don't know. Everyone seems to be talking about, you know, the impetus is with Lorenzo. Rossi needs, I mean, Mattox's blog this week, very worthwhile a read, or a very worthwhile read. You can get to Matt's blog through motomatters.com, David Emmett's website. David's got some interesting thoughts as well. Matt Roberts wrote a very good article, actually. I think Harry's going to put a link in the show notes on in the On Track Off-Road magazine, online magazine. And he was saying about Lorenzo's little shark thing in the paddock, which James Toseland gave him stick for. Matt said, no, I loved it.
That seems to be a little overly sensitive.
The shark thing?
No, giving him stick for it.
Mm. No, exactly. No, I think that's a good comeback game. Well, he, you know, Rossi was taking the piss out of me, saying the sharks are circling. Well, here I am,
yeah,
and I'm circling, and I can taste blood sort of thing. Yeah, no, I thought that was quite good. I don't know. I mean, we did that stat attack a few weeks ago, and it's all kind of ratchet already. you know, he fell off at bloody... Misano, did he fall off? It was Misano, wasn't it? With the wet, dry, wet, or dry, wet, dry.
Yeah, I tend to think that the rest of the year is down to the weather.
If it stays dry, you know, I still don't know. I don't know. Motegi should suit Lorenzo, and this is the point Matt Alex is taking. Rossi uses more fuel, partly because he's slightly heavier. He's not that much bigger than Lorenzo. But he is slightly heavier. But more in, through his use of the throttle, he tends to use more fuel. Motegi is, we know it's very fuel heavy. Most years, one of the Yamahas will run out of fuel on its warm down lap, you know, inshallah, not during the race. But they have to lean out Ross's bike a little bit, which just reduces his power a little bit. If Lorenzo gets in the groove, but, you know, if Marquez is there and he's fit, I mean, if he's able to ride, it's his left hand, it's not his right hand, so it's not as critical as the throttle hand. They barely use the clutch, except for the launch. So, Pedrosa's gone well at Motegi before. The Ducatis should be suited, but I can't see either Iannone or Dovi having the pace to mess with the leaders. I just don't know. PI, I think, immediately Rossi. Rossi track. Sepang? Neither of them, really. Either of them. Valencia, very much Lorenzo favoured, except when we looked at those stats, Rossi's got a better record, only because Lorenzo's fallen off a couple of times. But if Lorenzo finishes at Valencia, he tends to win.
I just hope it comes down to Valencia with less than 10 points between them,
mm-hmm,
and it starts drizzling after FP3. Not full rain, just enough to make it really interesting.
I've got to be honest. I think if Lorenzo wins the title, there will be an element of, that was a great season. Yeah, it really was good, wasn't it? Yeah, we went really close to the end. Mm. Whereas if Rossi wins it, it will be explosive. I think the drama...
The whole number 10 thing.
Yeah, the drama of winning a 10th title. You know, I want to see Rossi win a couple more races. I want to see Lorenzo win a couple more races. Like you said, well, sorry, there's only four left. I want to see it go down to the wire. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely no doubt. I want to see it go down to the wire. I think I've got to say, I would love to see the drama of a Rossi win. But whoever wins it, I want them to win it. I don't want it given to them because the other guy fell off, got speared by an out-of-control Exocet missile. Thankfully, Bautista's not fast enough on that Aprilia to get anywhere near them. You know,
Yeah, same here. I'm hoping for a, you know, clean run to the end of the championship. No, no asterisks.
Yeah, partly because I don't want the one who misses out to be able to come back and go, yeah, but, you know, if it wasn't for that, you know, stuck throttle, broken collarbone, act of God, lightning strike, seagull in the face at Phillip Island, which is, let's face it,
could happen.
The highest probability of it if it happening anywhere. You know, if it's something like that, it gives them a get-out clause, which is exactly the same reason as that I was so angry with Rossi when he tried to block Lorenzo coming up, because I was like, no, you've got to welcome all comers. You've got to beat them on the same equipment so they have no hiding place. And when Lorenzo started beating him, it was like, okay, now you have no hiding place. Yeah. What are you going to do about it? Well, fuck me. Rather than go to Ducati, have a failure and dribble off into retirement, he came back and proved me completely wrong, because I've written him off several times now. And it's brilliant to see, but part of me thinks if Lorenzo wins, Rossi will take it much better, publicly at least, than if Rossi wins, Lorenzo will. But everyone loves Rossi already, and not many people love Lorenzo, so that wouldn't really change anything.
Yeah, that's not going to change a thing. I was betting with my money, I would bet on Lorenzo. Mm-hmm. If I'm betting on wanting to be, you know...
If you were betting with someone else's money.
Well, betting with somebody else's money, which is the best way to do it. Or just, you know, when I think about wanting to coincide in time with something historic, which we all like, you know, like you were saying, the Rossi story would be fantastic. Yeah. They could finally set off all of those yellow smoke bombs at Valencia for a good reason.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that would be the thing, wouldn't it? If Lorenzo wins, there'll be all these prepared fireworks there not going off. There'll be a couple of black, red, and white ones which will go off, and we think, what are the other ones for? They're all the yellow ones.
Yeah.
They can't use now.
Yeah, it's funny. But I don't know if you saw, I mentioned it on Twitter after the race, sitting in the stands as the MotoGP race was winding down. Mm. There was, you know, a lot of banter because the grandstand I was in wasn't one of the normal ones. It was a mix. There was Rossi people, Lorenzo people, Pedrosa people, you know, the whole thing. Yeah. And, you know, they were all having a pretty good time. The banter was pretty good-natured. But when Lorenzo won, only the Lorenzo supporters, you know, were kind of excited about it. But when Rossi and Danny were going back and forth, everybody was excited about it, and much more excited than anybody was about Lorenzo, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was the same on telly. So every now and again, they cut to Lorenzo and go, oh, shit, yeah, of course. We're not watching the race, the battle for lead. Yeah. We're watching the battle for second and third. You sometimes feel it. And of course, they have to show the lead crossing the line, and they've done it so many times, and you're thinking, no, I really want to see what's going on behind because something interesting is happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess there's sponsorship obligations and the like. I'm actually stood here hopping from foot to foot because I have a bladder like a space hopper.
Oh, my goodness. Men of a certain age.
My back teeth are swimming. Well, I'm on my second pint of Guinness. I think we are done with that. Len, it's been marvellous.
Yeah, it's been great to catch up with you again.
It's always good. I mean, Harry and I have been kind of dominating the last few weeks, so it's nice to get a bit of a change of pace, and hopefully I didn't talk too much. And I don't think we're letting any state secrets go, but I'm going to Valencia. Jules is going to Valencia. You're coming to Valencia. And we may be able to meet up with Harry at some stage.
It's going to be a party.
Yes. And I think we should be rather good fun. So I just want the weather gods to be kind. I don't want any more rain. I don't want any more rain. Not because I don't want Rossi to do well. It's not that. Unless, of course, if Rossi comes off at Motegi, God forbid, and Lorenzo wins, then I want rain at Sepang. I want it. I want a monsoon at Sepang, and I want Arctic gales at Phillip Island to redress. I just don't care. I just want to get to Valencia. And like you say, not it's still mathematically possible.
No, have it be tight. 10 points or less.
10 points or less. Ideally, less than 5 points.
Yeah, make them race for it.
Winner takes all. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to wait until then.
Mm-hmm. Len, it's been marvellous. Thank you very much. Thank you, our dear listeners. And we will speak to you again next week after World Superbikes at Manicor and BSB at Silverstone.
Cheerio.